opponent. And we call the first case, and that's Falk versus Union Pacific Railroad Company. And for the Union Pacific, we recognize Mr. Bress. Or is it Bress or Bress?
Bress.
Bress.
Good morning, and may it please the court. In the 3 years or so since this case was last at this court, not much has changed. Despite this court's instruction, the district court did not decide whether Union Pacific has a sufficient property interest to ground its takings claim.
Now, Mr. Bress, talking about what hasn't changed, let me ask you about the certified questions. As I understand the panel's decision from 2011, it was that we can't resolve the constitutional, no need to resolve the constitutional question until we know whether the railroad has a sufficient interest to be affected. But the two certified questions do not ask us to look at the determination of the nature of your interest. And isn't that the foundation that the 2011 decision said we needed before we could address the rest of this?
Your Honor, I sympathize with the court in that sense.
I was trying to sympathize with you, so we're
right.
Simpatico, I guess.
Your Honor,
how do we deal with this?
I mean, the difficulty is this. If you read the first question, and I think you can read it, to allow this court to decide, if it can decide as a matter of law, and we believe it can, that Union Pacific has exclusive rights, even if held in servitude, then I believe you can get to the second question. If this court...
Well, we have a right. I mean, I think we're pretty clear on this, that you can raise questions that are related, even though they are not enumerated as the certified question. Anything that is related to it that allows us to resolve the questions that are certified.
Well,
that's right, Your Honor. So I believe this...
Let me follow up on that. That was to be my next question, but I'll now go to the third question. If that's true, that the whole order comes up here and not just the certified questions, do we have to resolve whether the district judge was right on, I mean, the panel in 2011 said ownership of the interest, which is maybe a bit of a misdirection, but Judge James and the parties were dealt with it, I think, fairly enough. But it seems to me that what has not yet been determined by Judge James, and we would be doing it initially, is that if that is, in fact, the interest that you have, is that the kind of interest that is adversely affected, I want to say taking, but adversely affected by these crossings? And that hasn't been decided by anybody, has it?
No, Your Honor, it has not. And that's a problem. The court decided only that we had servitudes rather than ownership, rather than fee, and didn't go on to decide whether the servitudes gave us a right to exclusive possession and control broad enough to exclude the landowner. I think there's really two options for the court in this context. We believe that this court's precedent and Louisiana Court of Appeals precedent already establishes that railroad servitudes are exclusive as to the underlying landowner. And I'm happy to discuss that. And if this court were to agree, I think it could decide that as a matter of law and move on. Alternatively, I think the only course of action for the court would be to remand with more specific instructions for the district court to address that issue in the first instance.
Well, round trip takes 3 years, apparently. Mm-hmm.
It does, Your Honor, which is why I guess I phrased in my options one and option two, option one first. I don't believe, by the way, that the court...
I'm a little bit confused because it seems to me that you all are not embracing the question of whether you have a servitude or a fee as being before us, even though I agree with Judge Jolly that it is because it's the order that's certified, not the question. But you all haven't really taken issue with fee versus servitude. So if that makes a difference, then we would be answering a question that might become irrelevant. If we were to say, for example, servitude isn't enough, but fee would be, and then you go back and you argue about the fee and whatever. I mean, do you see what I'm saying? Like, can we really get into the question number two if question number one is still hanging out there? Don't we have to answer question number one or at least affirm or reverse the district court on the fee versus servitude question?
I don't think there's anything left for us to do in the district court on that question, Your Honor. I agree that it could come up again here on appeal, and I understand
the problems. Well, the question is it in front of us right now? Because the order has been certified, so it's before us, and shouldn't we at least address that? It seems like y'all tried to bracket that out, and I'm saying, can we bracket it out?
Your Honor, we certainly didn't read, and perhaps mistakenly didn't read, the court's certified questions as broad enough to allow us to brief that to this court.
Okay, let me say this very clearly. The certified question isn't what gives us jurisdiction. It is the order. We said that en banc in Castellanos Contreras a few years ago, okay? So it isn't up to the district court to ask the question correctly. It's up to the district court to certify the order. So now that order is in front of us. Shouldn't we decide this fee versus servitude, if nothing else, so that we don't answer an empty question that's predicated on something that's still in dispute?
Your Honor, we'd be perfectly comfortable if the court were to address that question. In the end, again, we don't think it matters because this court in Polk versus Ball, this court in the Marietta Oil case, and the Louisiana Court of Appeal in the DeRitter case have all very consistently in a number of different contexts held that the right is exclusive. If I may, in Polk, this court said that the railroad servitude, ordinarily vests in the railroad virtually exclusive possession, depriving the grantor for all practical purposes of all dominion over its property. Similarly, in DeRitter, the Louisiana Court of Appeal held that a railroad servitude in practical effect is equivalent to fee ownership, and the fee owner in such instances ordinarily has no use of the property.
All right. Now, why would that broad holding that gives you substantial rights, not quite complete rights, virtually, and why would the Louisiana scheme constitute a take-in if it was simply determined in the light of that case and the Supreme Court case that addressed the same issue, the question of what the extent of the right of the property owner was?
Your Honor, there may be, as the word virtually suggests, some use that the owner retains. For example, it may be that the owner certainly could have some subterranean rights of that sort. But as this court held in Marathon Oil, the railroad has exclusive surface rights. And in this case, what the statute is going after is the surface rights. The statute is requiring Union Pacific.
What case held that the railroad had exclusive surface rights?
That's the Southern Railway versus Marietta Oil.
Decided case. That case. What is the?
It's this court, Your Honor.
This court.
It's a Fifth Circuit case.
What, is that the 1940 case?
Or? No, Your Honor. Marietta is. One second. It's a Southern City. It's Kansas City Southern Railway versus Marietta. It is an older case. It's Fifth Circuit, 1939. Your Honor, we think that the age of the case actually makes it more appropriate and not less, because it is more akin than today's cases would be to what rights the railroad was actually acquiring back when it was acquiring them. And a point that I think is important here is that the plaintiffs have sought to paint for this court a picture that railroad right exclusivity is something bizarre when it comes to the underlying fee owner, and that it's something that can't possibly exist. But as Your Honor recognized, the Supreme Court recognized very long ago in the Telegraph case and another case that we've cited, the Eighth Circuit in Midland Valley, has explained that the majority rule from long ago has been that the railroad's rights vis-a-vis the fee owner are exclusive. And obviously there's good reason for that. The railroad needs to be able to control the area around its tracks for safety and other purposes. Now, often the railroad has allowed crossings as a matter of comedy with fee owners who are adjacent to the tracks. Sometimes it's allowed them because there's been an enclosed estate and there's been a right established for passage. But none of that takes away the railroad's right when it so chooses, and here for good and sufficient purpose, to thin out the number of private crossings that are traversed.
Do you agree that you would be subject to the landlock statute of Louisiana?
Your Honor, the reason I think that I do agree, and the reason I believe we're subject to it, is that that qualification on what it means to own, either in fee or in servitude, has existed before Louisiana became a state. So certainly we took our estates with that as a qualification on the nature of the overall right. So yes.
How is it a taking at all just to put together a procedure whereby there has to be some degree of notice and so forth so that you all aren't just randomly taking their rights? I mean, to me, this isn't saying you don't get to use your right of way anymore, which might be a taking. This is just setting up a procedure to try to put some rationality to these closings, which seem to spawn a lot of litigation, because in my short but impactful life here on the court, I've had several of these Louisiana Railroad cases. So why isn't just having a procedure just a way to be orderly rather than a taking?
Well, first of all, Your Honor, I'll start at the end of the procedure and then work my way backwards. The question that the Louisiana Public Service Commission is addressing is not the underlying property rights question, which we think would be dispositive if the state weren't taking our property. You would just look to see who's got what property rights, and court would enforce them, or perhaps an administrative agency would enforce them. That's not the question that the LPSC is addressing, though. The LPSC is addressing only the question whether the particular crossing is causing unreasonable interference to the property itself. It's using the language, to the railroad operations, I should say. It's using the language that this court came out with in Franks for purposes of determining when you have federal preemption. The test for federal preemption is a stringent test. There's no question about that, but it's a very different test than would apply if you were trying to decide the property interests of the railroad and the farmers. So, for instance, in this case, our view is regardless of what interference their crossings are causing, and obviously they are causing some, it doesn't really matter. We've got exclusive rights with our servitude. So, to put it that way, the LPSC isn't addressing the property rights question.
Have you all actually used this procedure and not been allowed to close a crossing as a result?
No, we have not, Your Honor. And we haven't.
Is this sort of premature? Because, I mean, y'all are saying it's a taking, which to me is kind of a big word, when this is a procedure that maybe just turns out to be a big nothing. You file this thing, no one ever responds, you go and you close your crossing and you ride off into the sunset. We don't really know.
Yeah. Your Honor, I'll answer that both in an informal sense and a formal sense. In an informal sense, if you read the commission proceedings, which have been cited to this court, the LPSC proceedings, where they put in a rule that would implement the statute, it's quite clear they weren't viewing it as a nothing. In fact, there was a lot of hostility to the railroads. But in a more formal sense, there's a reason we haven't done it, which is we're not claiming that any one of these crossings constitutes a substantial interference with railroad operations. That's not our claim. In fact, given the Franks standard, we don't think we could prove that as to any particular one of these crossings. Our problem, the reason we're addressing this, is we've been told by the Federal Railroad Administration to thin out the total number of crossings because it causes safety problems and efficiency problems. That rationale doesn't line up at all with the standard that's been imposed under this law for the LPSC to look at. So for us to go there would be an utterly futile gesture, Your Honor. Beyond that, the 180-day waiting period that's being imposed, even if we have total fee ownership of our property, we've got to allow a trespass on it for 180 days. In the LeBlanc case that was decided by the Louisiana Court of Appeal, they held that a six-month use of the property by the adjacent landowner was a taking, a temporary taking that was compensable. We're saying it should be no different if the state has imposed that 6 months of trespass as a statutory matter.
Let me ask on the constitutional issue and what the proper forum is. You're not raising, despite the certified question, either in 11 or now, it seems, the federal constitution. You're just arguing about the state constitution because it is probably more helpful to you than the federal constitution. Isn't this a matter for the Louisiana Supreme Court once, if we decide that this is an issue properly teed up, despite all that we've been talking about already? Should we be answering this, or should it be certified?
I think the court has the option of going either way. As we've said, we agree with the state that it is a suitable question for certification. We also believe that the question is one that this court could answer on its own. We don't believe that on the facts of this case and the statute, it's that hard a question. But we understand that the court could certify it, and we're perfectly comfortable with that.
I know you're out of time, but wouldn't it be also necessary to certify the foundational question of the nature of the rights that the railroad has, so that they're not answering that in a vacuum?
Answering the
constitutional issue in a vacuum?
Your Honor, I think that this court would have to decide that question on its own. And if this court were to hold that the servitudes do give exclusive rights, then it could just certify the constitutional question, or it could certify both questions. Or if this court isn't able to decide as a matter of law that our rights are exclusive, I think the court would have to remand down to the district court to determine whether, in the particular context of these particular deeds, there are more hints that would tell us whether they're exclusive or not. That's an endeavor that the district court hasn't entertained. So I think those are the options.
Why wouldn't you rely on the United States Supreme Court and our court that have declared very clearly that you have exclusive rights, that the minimal intrusion on that exclusive right is so minimal that you have exclusive rights?
Your Honor, that is our argument, Your Honor, and if I've been unclear about that, I apologize.
Well, then I wouldn't certify it then.
Then I would certify it.
I mean, it's an issue that was decided by our court and the Supreme Court a long time ago.
Then I think you can move to the certified question, Your Honor, once you make that clear.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Reese, we will now hear from Mr. Jones of the Attorney General's Office of the State of Louisiana.
Good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. My name is Bo Jones, and I represent the state of Louisiana. And we're appearing for the sole purposes today to defend the constitutionality of 48-394. And as Mr. Bress has just showed you, we have a fundamental disagreement over the extent of Union Pacific and Railroad in general's right to exclusion. But I want to start with a point that Judge Southwick brought up, and that is a point where we all agree. And that is that whether this court has the ability to rule on the constitutional question, we all agree that it would be an appropriate question if this court reaches the constitutionality to bring this court question to the Louisiana Supreme Court for certification, as you've done in previous cases.
Let me ask, we have certainly had a lot of litigation over this. Is there not litigation in Louisiana state courts that might be presenting this issue?
Your Honor, to my knowledge, there is litigation going on in state courts on similar statutes, 48-390 in particular, that's about to go to the second state circuit. But as I think all of the issues regarding 48-394 have been resolved at the state issue, in particular, one case which brought up a very similar issue of 48-394 was the Louisiana Railroad Association's case at the 19th JDC in Baton Rouge. The Judge Morvant ruled in favor of the LPSC that the statute was on its face and as applied constitutional. Louisiana Railroad Authority did not appeal that decision. So it's a final decision at the 19th JDC. So the question would be appropriate. And I think even with regards to other questions that this court has certified, in particular the St. Joseph Abbey case, there are way fewer federal questions. In fact, no federal questions. And as Judge Haynes was on that panel, this would be absolutely an appropriate question to go to the Louisiana Supreme Court.
Well, they didn't seem to think so on St. Joseph.
And as Your Honor pointed out, in that case, there were federal questions. In your concurring opinion, there were significant federal questions in the Castile case. I don't think that's the situation here. I think all parties agree on that. But assuming that this court is going to reach the constitutional question here, I've only got 12 minutes, so I'll address that.
Now, I just want to be clear. It seems to me that the degree of exclusivity of this servitude is pertinent to the constitutional question, because they're saying we have exclusive rights and you're allowing a trespass for 180 days, and that's a taking of sorts. and then you have to look at the question of just compensation, yada, yada, if there's other factors. Whereas if they didn't have that degree of exclusivity, at least as against the underlying property owner, it would seem to be a different constitutional analysis. So do you have a view on that exclusivity question?
Absolutely. I think 2 points. First, Your Honor, I agree with you that that exclusivity question is, I would say, the primary question for a ruling on constitutionality, whether it's before this court, whether the Western District has to make that determination first, or whether the Louisiana Supreme Court. And as to the state's view on that exclusivity question, whether in fee or in servitude, what Union Pacific is ignoring here is a significant factual distinction, not only in the 10 crossings at issue here, but also with regards to all cases where 48.394 can apply, and that is where there's existing crossings. The Fifth Circuit jurisprudence, the United States Supreme Court jurisprudence, giving railroads this broad right to exclude or exclusive right to their right-of-way or to their fee title, does not include situations where there is an existing crossing. That factual scenario has not been addressed by this court, by the United States Supreme Court, in particular the Marietta case that Mr. Bress has addressed. That's a case where the underlying property owner and the adjacent property owner were attempting to drill an oil well within the railroad's right-of-way. What you have here is a situation, as the plaintiffs will show you, a situation where there are hundreds or decades and decades of crossings and the existence of those crossings under these railroads. What the state is simply saying that whatever rights the railroad has to the exclusive use of their tracks, which there's no question that under the Louisiana law and under federal law, a railroad servitude is different from a footpath servitude. You have to consider the mode of travel that's using that right of way. But in the situation that we have, if this court finds that this is an as-applied challenge in these 10 crossings or on its face to all previously held crossings, you are talking about a situation where there are sometimes decades and 100 years in situations here of this relationship where you have an underlying property owner, a servitude coming across that, and then a right to cross. And so that is the situation we're dealing here. And the state
right to cross is sort of like a servitude on a servitude?
It's sort of, but you run into some questions under Louisiana law with confusion as whether you can hold a servitude on your own property. But in some situations, for instance, if the railroad had that in fee title, then yes, it would be an apparent servitude to cross. And that is a situation.
Why not apply broadly, clearly, and just settle the matter forever? Or I guess never settle any matter forever. But to say that the Supreme Court and the Fifth Circuit has decided that, and we can't. They've said that they have exclusive rights with respect to all of these easements or crossroads or whatever you want to call it, and didn't let it go.
Well, with all due respect, Your Honor, I think that would be problematic in two situations. One, because I don't believe that the court has held that. The case law that has been cited in brief by Union Pacific.
Why is the Supreme Court case of, Union?
The Penn Railroad case.
The Western Union?
Yeah.
Because it was not dealing with the situation of an existing encroachment.
In other words, you're saying that broad statement was dicta?
No, Your Honor. It is that broad statement. From the facts come the law. And the facts in that case and the facts in all the federal cases that are citing here are dealing with a third-party encroachment. They're dealing with, for instance, even the Loretto case. You're dealing with the government. It's not a railroad case, but it's a servitude case. The railroad saying a cable line has to go through, or there is some third-party encroachment. We're not dealing with strangers. We're not dealing with third parties. This situation, not only the particular situation with these 10 crossings, but all situations in which 48...
They didn't make those exceptions that you're talking about.
They didn't make those exceptions, Your Honor, but it's the state's position that ruling does not cover that.
You're saying that wasn't an issue.
Absolutely. That's exactly the what I'm saying is that was not the issue, because you have a situation where, in this case, if Union Pacific were saying the state passed a law that says you have to put a crossing at this place, and this place, and it's a prospective law that's requiring them to suffer an invasion on their property, That would be problematic, but that's not the case we're dealing with here. You're talking about existing property, existing relationships, not third parties, not an encroachment.
Crossings in favor of the owner of the underlying land.
Absolutely. Neighboring property owners and the underlying owner of the land. And
also, let me ask you about that. What has been resolved by Judge James are the rights, ownership, title of the railroad. There was no effort to determine what rights the landowners had to these crossings. How long had they been there, under what factual situation they were created? Isn't that relevant in determining whether in a particular situation, which is what in 2011 we said we needed to know about each of these crossings?
Well, the answer
is relevant as well.
If it's relevant, I think you could expect the answer is it depends. And why it depends is because the ruling that was made there, did it address the exclusivity? Well, to the extent that they denied Union Pacific's motion for summary judgment, which explicitly raised that exclusivity, then addressed it in that end. As to the particular nature of the crossings, if this is an as-applied challenge as to those particular crossings, then there are at least four crossings. Of the 10 that have, or four of the 10 crossings that are at issue, that have a specific mention of crossings in the deed that was looked at by the Western Districts. Crossings 7, 8, 9, and 10 of the crossings all are referenced by document C1, as you can see in tab 8 of your records, are all referenced in the original deed from the 1880s. So, to the extent that that is a relevant question.
How do we resolve this issue, though? I mean, we've got to go one by one by one by one, and we'll still be here 100 years from now.
I don't think that's the situation, Your Honor. And you know, I want to take a step back to say that we're here on a constitutional challenge to 48.394. And I want to make a point, and I know we've argued, to answer your question, I know we've argued back and forth in brief and in previous cases about the as-applied versus facial challenge, and I recognize that it's not a simple pleading requirement. The Citizens United case says as much, that it's not a pleading requirement, it's the as-applied versus facial. But what we're dealing with is a challenge from Union Pacific. And yes, this comes in a case that deals with 10 particular crossings. But their argument is simply this, that the existence of a railroad's right, as they say in their brief, either in fee or in servitude, the existence of a railroad's right and the existence of 48.394 amounts to a taking. That's a facial challenge. That gets at the entirety of the statute. Now, as to your question of how we address this particular case, I think one way would be to call a spade a spade, and in their thinly guised, as applied challenge, and say that this is a facial challenge attacking the sanctity of 48.394, and maintain your diversity jurisdiction over this case, shoot it to the Louisiana Supreme Court, have the Supreme Court make that decision. If the court feels it's appropriate to keep it here, make that decision based on the fact that whether...
I would think the law of the case may, to some extent, prevent us from reconfiguring what is before us. The panel in 2011 said we needed to know factually about these crossings. If it were a facial challenge, and then whatever the right a railroad might have in Louisiana, it would be sufficient for that facial challenge, if that had been basically the argument you're making here, then our action 3 years ago was a mistake.
Well, Your Honor, I think to a certain extent the state would have to agree that the ruling in 2011, to the extent that it called it an as-applied challenge, was incorrect. But with respect to that question now, if this court finds that it's as applied, if says that it's as applied to these particular facts, then we would just ask that the ruling be narrowly tailored to those, because what we're dealing with, we've got hundreds of crossings around the state of Louisiana. 48.394 does not just apply in Ouachita Parish. And so the state sees a situation wherein they
hundreds
take...
Hundreds and hundreds of crossings.
That's my understanding, Your Honor. They're, in this case, 10 in a 3-mile section.
Would you, if you were writing the certified question, would you include in the certified question this issue of exclusivity vis-a-vis the underlying owner, or would you just ask the constitutional question straight up?
Your Honor, if the constitutionality of this law is determined, I think that question has to be asked, either in the certified question or I think it's as by virtue of the constitutional challenge. If you look at this, the DOTD versus Chambers case, which essentially sets out a three-pronged test to determine a takings challenge, the first question is that we've got to determine the nature of the right and whether that is a recognized species of property right. So fee, yes, recognized. Servitude, yes, recognized, but we've got to determine the nature of that right because, as Your Honor pointed out in the appellate's argument, if this law only takes away that absolute exclusivity and for only those 100 days, if they never had that right in the first place, then it's almost a standing question. Then it's almost a question that they don't have a right to challenge the
attacking. But I guess what I could see an argument that the railroad and the underlying property owner, you know, Mr. X and the railroad both have rights in this property, and then it would seem like this statute's just a way to kind of mediate disputes among neighbors, so to speak, rather than anything else, rather than a takings. On the other hand, if the railroad's right is exclusive, even exclusive to the existing crossing of this of Mr. X, then I think you arguably have this notion that this procedure is in. Because I wouldn't really want to have to go to the Louisiana Commission or whatever to say that I can plant a bush in my, you know, in my front yard and wait 180 days for them to have a hearing about whether I should plant this bush. So I understand what they're saying. It's an infringement on their right. So don't we have to get into that necessarily, either us or ask the Louisiana Supreme Court?
I agree. To a certain extent, you have to. To answer the first question that's required for a constitutional takings argument in Louisiana, we have to determine the nature of that right. Without answering that question, we can't get to the constitutionality. And Your Honor points—
Who should do that? The district court, us, or the Louisiana Supreme Court?
I think it's a question of—it's up to you, Your Honor, obviously.
Of course.
But it's a question of who could do it. I think the Western District clearly could have said more. They absolutely could have said more with respect to the property right. Do they have to? I'm not sure, because I think where we are now is we're at a legal question. What does the law, and I think we have to look at the Civil Code articles, Article 705, Articles 730. We have to look at the Civil Code articles to determine what is the nature of a right in servitude. So it's a legal question that I think this court could answer. Could the Louisiana Supreme Court answer it? Absolutely. And the state would address that would be the most appropriate forum for it to be handled in, because it would have absolute application throughout the state of Louisiana, not just to these particular parties, and it would resolve the issue once and for all. So, and with that, thank you, Your Honors.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Jones. We will now hear from Mr. Verlander for Falk.
Thank you. I'm going to see if I can find a way to express my client's concerns and interests in 5 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there are some common sense and practical things that need to be considered as part of the background of this. First, these crossings have been there for 125 years, give or take, without incident, without complaint, without problem, until now. These farmers granted the railroad, or their predecessors entitled, granted the railroad the right to build their tracks through the farms, through the middle of their farms. If any farmer thought that by allowing that, that meant that he couldn't cross over that track to get to the rest of his field so that he could work them and harvest them, no farmer in his right mind would ever give a railroad a right of way anywhere, because they have to be able to work their land.
That the government would take that property anyway. If they didn't grant that easement, the government would take it.
Well, then they'd have to pay for it, not $300. They would have to pay for the damage to the utility of the rest of the land in the process, and they would render it substantially worthless if you couldn't get to it.
How does the landlock law apply to that?
I think it definitely is going to apply if these crossings are dug up, because there are 11 separate tracts of land owned by 4 different owners in this stretch of land. Only 3 of those 11 tracts touch any public road without going over the railroad track. That is, 3 of these tracts can access a public road crossing to get out to the main highway and to get to the lands that are on the other side of the highway. The other 8 have no way to get in or out of them without going across the track. There's no public road touching them. They rely completely on these private crossings.
They say they will abide by the land. They consider themselves bound by the law of Louisiana with respect to landlocked land.
Well, then they shouldn't be wanting to dig up these crossings. Because they will make the, they're not landlocked as long as the crossings are there. We have access to a public road, but once they dig them up, then what do? We go back.
That's the reason for this statute, is to prevent them from just digging it up, and then you go fight. Now you have to have the fight in advance.
Exactly. I mean, there clearly is not, at least clearly to me, there is not an exclusivity of possession and control from getting a servitude of passage across these farmers' fields. First of all, as counsel for the state pointed out, the district court found the deed clearly says that as to four of these crossings, they're on a tract of land where the railroad's title transfer document says that they have to allow crossings. Well, if nothing else, if the railroad ever had a right of exclusive possession as to that area, it surrendered it in the deed. You can't say that the railroad gave a right to crossings.
Seems like we have a lot of detail when you're talking, and yet the decisions that are being made are very big picture, kind of what Judge Southwick mentioned before. We have arguably an as applied, and yet we're talking in these vast terms, and it seems like each one of these tracts kind of has a different story. The deed might be different, the landlock issue, this and that.
That's why an administrative review is an efficient way to look at these kind of problems.
Well, certainly better than an oral argument in the Fifth Circuit.
Yeah. And it would hopefully be quicker, than the years that we've taken. I mean, we disagree. The Supreme Court cases, the federal cases that are in arising out of servitudes or rights of way for railroads in other states, we think those are basically determinative of the law in those particular states. But because the ownership rights that the railroad has are determined by state law. This court has held that. If it's determined by state law, whether it's exclusive or not is a state law question. So a U.S. Supreme Court case out in determining Pennsylvania law is not going to answer the question for Louisiana.
Yeah, but it made a broad statement, not just with respect.
I understand they made a broad statement, but the context in which that statement was made was, does this right-of-way in Pennsylvania, which is owned under Pennsylvania law, grant an exclusive right of possession or not? Different states have different laws about what a right-of-way is. Louisiana law has things that say it's a right to reasonable use and that doubt is resolved in favor of the servient estate, which is the farmers in this case, which indicates pretty clearly that it's not, under Louisiana law, deemed to be an exclusive right. A personal servitude of passage, which is really what this is. It's a servitude in favor of a person, not of another tract of land. Specifically says in Civil Code Article 639 that it is a right less than full enjoyment. And to answer another question that came up with you, you can have a servitude over a servitude in Louisiana. There is a specific Civil Code article that addresses that.
And that is?
725.
That you cannot?
That you can. You may have a servitude over a servitude, so to speak.
You have a red light, Mr.
Yes, sir. I'm sorry. It's very hard for a lawyer to speak for five minutes.
If you have another point that you would like to make, we will listen to it.
I do think that common sense needs to enter into this. There's a balancing that needs to take place to determine the rights of these parties and the utility of these crossings. Whether maybe there are some of them, the Public Service Commission will say, well, you don't need that many. The state has adopted a reasonable process to review that. The constitutional.
So if that's what you have to say,
yes,
we will move on to rebuttal from Mr. Press.
If I can just start with this administrative process, because I think the wrong impression is being created about it. It is not a process where the LPSC is given unlimited discretion to weigh factors and decide what the right state policy is. It's being asked purely to decide whether a particular crossing is a substantial interference with railroad operations. It doesn't look at the underlying property rights. It doesn't weigh how much the farmer needs the crossing or what the farmer's history is. It just asks whether that particular crossing is a substantial interference, and it won't be. It
but
never will be.
The fact of having this process then allow for dialogue. Because the thing that I've noticed with these railroad cases, and granted, I've made a study of them, is they seem to be a little heavy-handed. I mean, the railroad kind of comes in and just says, we're closing it, have a nice day. And this process at least sort of requires everybody to come to the table. Maybe the adjudicators themselves can't make everything happen. But if you're forced to come to the table, in my experience, great things happen when people sit
down
together.
Your Honor, not when the, you know, I used to be a transactional lawyer, Your Honor. Not when the law as it exists gives all the leverage to one side.
So you're saying there's too big a thumb on the scale.
That's exactly
but
right.
Isn't the degree of the thumb a state law question? I mean, that isn't a
question. But we already know what the thumb is. It is the test this court applied in Franks, and as to any one of these crossings, we already know.
Do you have this problem in every state to the extent that you have it in Louisiana?
No, we don't, Your Honor. We do not.
Why is that?
Your Honor, Louisiana is one of the 10 worst states in terms of the number of crossings and the problems that's caused by the crossings. And that's the reason that Union Pacific...
Obviously created by the railroads themselves.
What's that?
Obviously created many, many years ago.
Oh. Understood, Your Honor, but it's something we're addressing again with the Fed, with the federal government asking
why,
us to.
Why did it happen in Louisiana and not in other states?
Well, in a number of other states it occurred as well, Your Honor. I'm not saying Louisiana is the only one, but it's one of the 10 that have been pointed out as the most accidents, the most deaths, the most problems.
See, I can't remember a Texas or Mississippi railroad crossing case in the 6 years I've been here. That doesn't mean we haven't had one or whatever. I just don't remember it, but I do remember it seems to come up fairly regularly with Louisiana. So what's...
No, Your Honor, and this, look, this, the laws that are being passed right now is part of the reason, obviously, that we're in this litigation. I understand Franks didn't involve this law. The interesting thing in Franks, by the way, is that, you know, getting to one of the points in this case is Franks did decide on remand and then was upheld by this court that the adjoining landowner was only a precarious possessor. In other words, had no right to the crossing, even though it had been there a long time. So plaintiffs' arguments that they've made
well,
to this court.
Well, I think the upholding was a finding of no reversible error.
But the decision below was that. My big larger point on that being the fact that these crossings have been there for a long time doesn't change the nature of the rights. They've been there by permission. They've been invitees. And so if we're correct that we've got exclusive possession and control, the fact that we've allowed a crossing for a long time doesn't create rights in it because it hasn't been an adverse possession. So, you know, I think that that's really an irrelevant point. I will note a couple of corrections, if I may, just because I think it will help the court. Under Louisiana law, you can't have a servitude over the land that you own in fee. So while it's true that you can have a servitude over a servitude, because you can't have a servitude over your own land, they can't establish a right to cross in that way.
That's because you would view that as part of your reserved rights. It would answer this notion of you have an exclusive right as against me, the owner of the underlying estate.
That's right, Your Honor.
So, I mean, that's kind of...
Well, then it goes back to what the original law is. And again, on that, this court did address, and the Supreme Court did address, the question not in the abstract vis-a-vis strangers, but the question about what the rights are vis-a-vis the underlying landowner. And that's why this court said deprives the grantor for all practical purposes of all dominion over the property. It's why De Ritter said the fee owner in such instances
in crossing cases as opposed to just track cases. You know, because I understand a railroad track goes a long way. I might own 100 acres and there might be tracks on the whole 100 acres and I have one crossing. So that one crossing may not have been the question in the 100 acre case.
Your Honor, I guess where I would go with that is if there the fact that four of these crossings, I think it's the ones covered by deeds C4 and C7 here, do have specific mention in the deed of a right to crossings, I think tells us something in a inclusio unius, exclusio alterius sense, which is when they wanted to, these were all granted at the same time, often on the same forms, when they wanted to say, we've got a right to a crossing, they did. None of this has been demonstrated as
are
to the other.
Are you trying to close the four crossings that they have a right to?
Your Honor, what we've written in our brief to this court and what we believe is that as to those crossings, there needs to be a remand to determine what is the extent of the crossings that were granted.
Yes.
Well, no, the extent of them, not whether there were. We agree that there were, Your Honor. If I can just make one more point, which is as to the as-applied versus facial nature of the case. which was brought up by the state. This is about as clearly as applied as you could possibly get. We're talking about 9 or 10 specific crossings that we were involved in a state law, purely property law dispute over down in trial court. The plaintiffs have argued that this statute prevents us from exercising the rights we're given as to these particular properties under state property law. And we've said no, because if it did that, that would be a taking as to these particular properties. The fact that a holding on this might eventually have effect on other crossings in the state doesn't make this facial. I mean, that's true of almost any as-applied challenge, that it could have effect on other similarly situated parties.
Okay, well, thank you very much. Difficult case.